Chapter 4 Nikos dashed outside and ran around the house the way his dog had gone.
Rio! Rio!
At the back of the house, facing uncleared jungle, a row of poles had been driven into the ground, a half-finished stockade, intended to keep sheep in and big birds out. Nikos pushed his way through the tea plants and saplings that choked the once-cleared space between house and stockade, and he almost fell into a hole in the ground. He took a cautious step back and peered down. The hole was maybe 6 feet across, and had been covered by rough-cut planks of wood that had evidently softened, made rotten by time. He could see from the remaining planks that they had been buried under soil, with a heaping of forest mulch on top of that. There were even a few hardy ferns sprouting in that skim of earth. But one of the planks had broken now, and fallen into the hole, revealing a deep black space. Nikos scratched his head. The whole thing was kind of puzzling. Was this a cellar? It could be. As well as a place to store food and other stuff, a cellar was a sensible precaution against attack by bandits and others with nefarious purposes. If you had a stepper box, no wall could keep you out after all. You just needed to step sideways into a world where that wall didn't exist, walk through the location of the wall, and step back again. Nobody could step into a cellar, however. Not with the same location in neighboring worlds blocked off by soil and bedrock and tree roots. There were even shallow cellars under some of Nikos's family's larger, better-established encampments, dotted stepwise across the worlds. Yes, you'd expect a house like this to have a cellar, or at least the beginnings of one. But why plank it over? And while all this crud on top of the planks might have just gathered there with the years, it looked like the hole had been deliberately concealed. Why hide it? Was it actually some kind of trap, rather than a cellar? But a trap for what? Only a big bird or a croc, or a big dog like Rio, or a human, would have been heavy enough to smash through those planks. And maybe not at all back when the planks weren't so far gone rotten as they were now. None of this mattered. Rio was missing. He hesitated, there in the unshaded sunshine. Enclosure underground would be even worse than in the Poulsen house, because his primary defense, stepping out of any danger, wouldn't be available to him. He nearly backed away, but Rio, carried all the way from Datum Earth as a pup by a trader, she was a Bernese mountain dog, bred, it was said, to pull carts laden with cheese. She was strong with good lungs, but slow. She was Nikos's dog. If he had to climb down into this hole, he would. He got down on his hands and knees, cautiously, and peered into the hole through the broken plank. All he saw was darkness, even when he shone in his flashlight.
Rio!
At first he heard nothing at all, not even an echo. Then came a bark, undoubtedly Rio's, from out of the hole. But it sounded remarkably far off. Not like it was from a dog trapped just a few feet down.
Rio! Rio!
And then he heard another sound, a kind of scraping, almost a whispering, like some huge insect. It seemed to move away, as if burrowing deeper down. All the legends and scare stories in his head came bubbling back to the surface. Again he almost backed off. But his dog was down there. Feverishly he began to pull away the remaining planks, carelessly tipping dirt into the hole.
Rio! Here, girl! Rio!
The pit he revealed was only maybe 8 feet deep, crudely cut into loose-packed earth. He dangled over the edge, made sure he could scramble back up the sides before committing himself. Then he dropped down to the bottom. He looked around. If this had been intended to be a cellar, it wasn't much of one. The walls bare earth, the floor still showing the spade marks left by the original digger and not smoothed off. It was just a hole in the ground, hastily cut, and more hastily concealed. And there was no sign of his dog. It was pretty clear where Rio had gone, though. There was a breach in one wall, down near the floor. Making sure he had his pocket knife to hand, Nikos got down on hands and knees and found himself looking into a kind of tunnel in the earth. It wasn't too wide, just a few feet, but it was a lot more smoothly cut than the aborted cellar, with a circular profile and smooth walls. And, he saw, sweeping his flashlight, it sloped down at a fairly steep angle, down into darkness, beyond the reach of his light. What could have made this? Some kind of burrowing animal, maybe? There were furballs that lived underground, and his mind conjured up a vision of a squirrel mole the size of a human, with claws on his big digging paws, the size of spades. It would be like a kobold, he thought, a human-sized mole-like humanoid that sometimes came by, trying to trade. But he remembered that peculiar rustling, that whispering, scraping noise, like no sound a furball would make, or even a kobold. Then, in the furthest distance, he heard another bark, a frightened yelp. He let instinct take over.
Coming, girl! Just you wait for Nikos!
He took his flashlight in his mouth, entered the tunnel on all fours, and began to crawl down the slope. Under his hands and knees, there was only dirt, smoothed over and close-packed. Behind him, the disk of daylight receded, while ahead of him, the light of the flash showed another opening at the end of the tunnel, a neat circle that let out into a still deeper dark. Being shut up in this tunnel was scary, and the stepper box at his belt made it awkward to move. He'd have to back up to get out of here, for he'd have trouble turning round. But he pushed on. He travelled maybe 20 feet, he figured, a steady descent down into the dark. Then the slanting shaft ended in an opening to a much larger chamber. Still on his hands and knees, he cautiously peered out, waving his light. His flash picked up a roof and floor, both smoothly worked, maybe 10 feet apart, and pillars, like remnants of cutaway dirt or bedrock, regularly placed. He couldn't see any walls to either side or ahead. His flash wouldn't reach that far. He was evidently entering a much more expansive space, wide and deep. So much for his ideas about squirrel moles. What the hell was all this? It reminded him of what he'd read in his mother's irregular school classes about mining back on the low earths. He knew there was a seam of iron ore around here that the founders had plundered when the Poulsons had built their forge. The rich seam, unique to this particular world, was one reason they'd settled here. But he'd seen the size of that home-built forge, and the handfuls of nails and such they'd made, the few horseshoes for the exotic-sounding animals they'd meant to import here some day, but had never gotten around to. Nikos had never seen a horse. They could never have dug all this out in such a short time, and there would have been no need anyhow. But if not them, the face appeared in front of him. Face. That was one word for it. A mask that was vaguely the shape of a human face, one side covered by silvery metal, the other, even worse, sculpted out of what looked like the black, shiny stuff God made beetles out of, as his father might have said. But it was a definite face, mounted on a tiny-looking head that tilted on a narrow neck. It almost looked curious, inspecting him, that odd head, tilting. Curious. Alive. The delayed shock hit him. He screamed, and the noise echoed loudly from that big, open chamber beyond. He tried to back up, but he lost his hold on the tunnel's sloping floor and he slid forward and tumbled out of the shaft, right into the arms of the silver beetle creature. Arms? Did it have arms? He felt cold metal under his back, his legs. He yelled and struggled and was released. He hit the ground, a drop of only a few feet, but it knocked the wind out of him, and he dropped his flashlight. He rolled to his feet quickly, but in the dark, with the fallen flash giving only a sliver of light, he felt turned around, disoriented. He saw the beetle thing roll onto its belly and scuttle away, perhaps as alarmed as he was. It looked human-sized, but like a beetle or a locust in its shape, and the way it moved, and in the shiny black hardness of its body, its multiple limbs. And he saw, he heard, more beetle creatures approach. He grabbed the flashlight off the floor and swung it around. They were coming at him from all sides, crawling along the ground like an ant swarm, but much larger, more monstrous, and the way those shiny black carapaces were laced with metal, stuff that had been made, was somehow even more horrific. When he pointed the light at one, it flinched back as if dazzled, but from every other direction they kept on approaching. And when they got close, they started rearing up, and he saw soft bellies exposed, with pale grey pods clinging to greenish flesh like blisters. Then one of them rose up right before him. He saw a half-face silver mask, just like the first he'd encountered. Maybe it actually was the first. He had no way of distinguishing them one from another, and a kind of tentacle, thread-like, silvery, reached out towards him. He tried to stay still, but when the pseudopod touched him, cold metal on warm flesh, Nikos's nerve broke. He ran forward, yelling, waving his flashlight, pushing through rustling bodies that tipped and scrambled to get out of his way. He didn't get very far before he tripped over something and fell onto a hard, compacted floor. Again he dropped the flash, and he had moments of panic in the shifting shadows of the dark before he got it back. Moments when he could hear them shifting and whispering and scraping all around him. He had no idea which way the wall was, and the shaft he'd emerged from. Panic rose again, choking him. And once more one of the beetle things reached out with a squirming, silvery, tentacle limb. Without thinking, Nikos lashed out with the flashlight. He caught the thing on the dark side of its face, avoiding the metal mask. The black shell cracked, and a kind of pulp, green and foul-smelling, leaked out. As the beetle fell back, another made to grab its wounded companion, but in doing so it came close to Nikos, and again he swung the flashlight, and the beetle disappeared with a pop of air. Nikos was astonished. It was as if the beetle had stepped out of this big cellar, this cavern under the ground. How was that possible? Again, they closed in on him, moving more cautiously now, those strange half-faces with their single eyes following the flashlight as he swung it back and forth. He couldn't get away, and if they rushed him, he couldn't get them all. He tried to think. That beetle had stepped away. You couldn't step out of a hole in the ground, but the beetle had. If a beetle could, he could. His stepper box was still at his belt. He turned its big clunky switch left and right, east and west, and tried to step. But both ways he felt the strange pushback you got if you tried to step out of a cellar or into a space occupied by something massive like a big sequoia. It was impossible. You couldn't step into solid earth or rock. But that beetle had stepped. There must be some way to do this. The beetles were still closing in. With a spasm of fear and disgust, he tried again. He twisted the switch of his stepper box until it broke off in his hand. But then he stepped. Neither east nor west. He wasn't in a hole anymore. He was sitting on hard, smooth ground. There was a sky above him, brilliant, dazzling, and the light hurt his eyes after the darkness of the big cellar. But this sky was orange-brown, not blue, and there was no sun or moon, nothing but stars, like the clearest night, with many more stars than he'd ever seen. And some of those stars were bright, brighter than any star or planet, brighter than the moon, bright as shards of the sun. Frozen by shock, he took a jerky breath. The air was thin and smelled of metal, of dryness. He looked around. The ground under him was like compacted earth. He sat on a slope that stretched down to what looked like a river. On the far bank, some kind of pale, translucent bubbles crowded together. They were like the blisters he had seen on the belly of the beetle beasts, he thought. But these were bigger, the size of buildings, and they were fixed to the ground, or some were, when others seemed to be straining to rise into the air. And beetle things crawled along paths and roads that tracked the riverbank and crossed low bridges over the water, hundreds of them, in great crowds, rustling, scraping. All this in a heartbeat, a rush of impressions. There was a beetle right beside him. Nikos hadn't seen it approach. That half-silvered face hovered in front of him, and a coiling pseudopod reached for his right temple. He felt overcome. He'd seen too much to take in, and couldn't react. He didn't resist. He noticed one more odd thing about the shining sky, that many of the stars to his left, while bright, were tinged green, but those to his right were pure white. Then something cold touched his head. Blackness closed in around his vision, like he was falling down another tunnel. He woke with a start. He was lying on his back. There was blue sky above him, and around him were walls of dirt, good, clean, ordinary dirt. He was back in that half-dug pit, under the ordinary sky, out of the big cellar. Almost in a panic, he took a breath, and sweet air, thick with the scents of the flowers of the forest, filled his lungs. He sat up, gasped and coughed, his throat aching. Something touched his face. Thinking it was the silver tentacle of one of the nightmarish beetle creatures, he twisted away and got to his feet. It was Rio. She'd licked Nikos's face, and she dropped an animal on the ground beside him, just a dwarf raccoon, unremarkable, limp, and dead. Nikos looked around quickly and searched his pockets, his pouch. He still had those baby moccasins. He'd lost his flashlight, and he wondered how he was going to explain that away. But here was Rio, safe and sound. She submitted to being grabbed and petted. Then she was first to scramble out of the pit and head for home. Nikos said nothing to his parents about his adventure in the old Pulsum place. The fear gripped him for a whole day and a night. He couldn't even sleep for thinking about it. But on the second day, he went back to the fringe of the ragged clearing and inspected the Pulsum house from the safety of the cover of the trees. By the third day, he was going back in, with his buddies, back into the big cellar.